And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi, everyone. I just hit puberty. Sorry.
Hi.
You should leave that into the episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, while Obi-Wan hunts for General Grievous, Rex stumbles upon clone deserter Cut LaQuane. There'll be tons of Rex and more Rex and some other guys too, but Rex and Rex and more Rex, and we're talking about the deserter this week. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, I knew this was going to be a giddy one.
I was so excited about this episode that when I was driving earlier today, like that.
Did you like this episode at all, you think?
I hated it 100%.
Yeah, it's tough. Hey, I know you know this, but I'm just saying it for the listener's sake, but I found a Rex-centric YouTube channel, of all things. Just stumbled upon it.
That's awesome. Like, I was so excited about this episode when I was driving around. I was singing that new Sia song, but I was just sitting there going, come on, come on, get your blasters on. It's Wednesday night, and it won't be long till I hit the Clone Wars. Hit the Clone Wars, that is all I need. I ain't got Jedi, I ain't got Jedi. I got Rex, baby. Baby, I know I'm gonna go and have fun tonight. I love Clone Wars. I know I'm gonna go and have fun tonight. I love Clone Wars. I was just singing it.
Now that you got the YouTube channel, you gotta get one of those little dashboard cameras for the car.
You know?
You could just hit record when you're driving around doing that.
No, I actually talk to myself a lot when I drive. I probably just look like a crazy person.
That could be a whole show in itself.
Because, like, I honestly, like, a lot of times when I'm driving, like, one of my jobs is I'm a writer, so, I talk out loud to myself when I'm thinking, and so a lot of times it's just me, like, talking and spouting and, like, thinking out ideas out loud and stuff like that. I would love to do that on a road trip, though, with friends. Like, that's something I would love to do. I would love to, like, go on a road trip with, like, some of my buddies from, like, Greetings from Storybrooke, like, Bill Meeks and, like, maybe Michael Lucero and Anne-Marie DeSimone and Bobby Hawk. I just called them all out now. Let's go on a road trip. And just drive 6-8 hours somewhere and just do live streaming from a GoPro or something. And just go on a road trip to, like, a once convention. Like, I've actually thought about that many, many times. Mostly just because I don't like flying. I hate flying. And just live stream on a trip together, but we all live in different places, so it wouldn't work out very nicely. We'd have to meet in one location,
right?
And bingo, because we're all in different states. Though Bobby and Marie and Bill, if it was an up north convention, could come pick me up, and then we can go pick up Michael and then just go up the coast. That could be a thing. Let's do it, guys. Anyway, Rex. But first, in news that I pretty much think is cool, we have a few topics. For one, last week we said we would hopefully be discussing a Rogue One trailer. Last weekend was Comic-Con. At this time, there's no new trailer. There was a leak. I haven't seen it yet. Have you?
I did.
Yes, was it good or bad? That's all I want to know.
It was somebody's camera phone video of the trailer. And it was basically stuff that we've seen before in other trailers, but the last shot was a shot of Darth Vader reflecting
on a
panel of a...
No, I don't want to know.
Yeah, it doesn't... I mean, it doesn't give away anything that anybody didn't know.
I didn't even know that Darth Vader was in it.
What? Oh, my God. Yeah, that everybody's sort of known that from the beginning, Hope.
I knew he was in the movie. I didn't want to know he was in the trailer.
Oh, yeah. Well, sort of.
Because I'm doing a trailer reaction, Chris.
Oh, well, you asked.
No, all I asked was yes or no, was it good? That's all I asked.
Oh. Spoilers.
Fuck you, I love you. God damn it, now I want to see it. Oh, man. Yeah. At least I have Rex tonight, because Chris has failed me.
That's okay. You're allowed to spoil one, like, season 5 or 6 thing for me sometime here, coming up then.
That's actually really relevant, because one of the other 2 things I just wanted to mention in news that hoping Chris think is cool. 2 weekends ago, we had the celebration and everything, and I finally got around to watching the Ahsoka's Untold Stories panel. And even Aaron on our Two True Freaks Facebook page has said, like, I really hope you guys do a podcast on this panel. Because I'm not going to tell you, like, all the details and everything, but it was really cool, Chris, because they released all these, like, sketches and stories that they didn't actually get to do in Clone Wars. And one was, like, Ahsoka as a child and, like, finding out she's a Force user and, like, how this one bounty hunter posed as a Jedi, kind of, like, pre-Clone, like, Cad Bane, and tried to kidnap her. But Plo Koon came, actually dressed looking a lot scarier, like a Sith Lord, and was, like, trying to, like, stop her and, like, save Ahsoka as a toddler. And then they had, like, all these other stories, like, leading up to what she was doing in the time while away from the, after, like, post-season 6 and, like, leading up to the Siege of Mandalore, and how she got, like, her own platoon at the Siege of Mandalore, and they all had this, like, orange painting on their armor to symbolize that she was the general. And Anakin literally gave him her half of the 501st and gave her command of Rex.
Oh.
Yeah. So it makes it more prominent when in Rebels, and Rex said, I didn't attack my general in Order 66. He's talking about Ahsoka. He's not talking about Anakin. Because at the time Order 66 happened, he was serving Ahsoka, not Anakin at the time.
Oh.
I know. I was just like, oh my god, the Rex Ahsoka feelings. My feelings hurt. So that I was just like, oh man, oh, that was so good. Oh. So if you haven't seen the Ahsoka's Old Told Stories panel, yes, there's a lot of spoilers for the end of the season. So if you want to stay spoiler-free, I don't recommend it. Also, Dave Filoni is the biggest fucking troll because he purposely kept making Ashley Eckstein cry.
Oh, jeez.
Because a lot of this stuff is like, he only told her as much as she needed to know to do her performances. So right. A lot of stuff she was finding out when the fans were finding out. And so she started crying. He goes, it's okay now. You live. You'll be fine. And she was like, oh my god, I can't believe this. Oh. But, listeners, tonight we have something really cool for you before we get into the deserters. Because the other night on Facebook, Chris and I started a debate, and it is a very important Star Wars, the Clone Wars topic, and we felt like as we were debating this, it was so important that it needed to be discussed on the show, and then lo and behold, when we were watching the episode, it's a topic that actually comes up, so we're like, oh, hey, it worked out, but there's no way around this, so before we get into the deserter, we're going to discuss our 2 sides on this important topic. Do clones have dicks?
Now, you didn't exactly describe how it started. It started with me mistyping the word "and" as "nad," and talking about, I was saying something blah 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 and Rex, but I wrote blah 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 nad Rex, and then I corrected it to like not nad Rex and Rex, which started a slew of jokes, which started actually the actual conversation.
And then I got excited about Rex's nads, like it was.
Yeah.
A thing.
Yeah, because I'm not going to argue that the clones don't have dicks, although maybe they don't. I don't know specifically how, you know, the naked parts work in a galaxy far, far away. But if we're going to assume that they're just normal humanoids, or nads, too. I would imagine they'd have nads, just nothing in the nads. You know what I mean? Blank. I would figure the clones would shoot blanks. That way they wouldn't be getting tied up with families and stuff like that.
Saying that like stormtroopers, they also miss?
Yes. They're early versions of stormtroopers. Yeah, they're like Steve Zissou in The Life Aquatic, shooting blanks. If I was a clone designer, I would think that would be just sort of built in.
See, a buddy of mine brought up a good point. Was they eat? We see them eat, so they have to expel it somehow.
Right.
But we don't know the argument I was making. Like, even if they don't have like penises and stuff like that, they probably do have penises. They have to pee, but they're probably not fertile.
Unless they had like a cloaca, like a chicken that was just an all-purpose hole.
like you know, it goes up in our body and it just comes out when needed.
No, chickens pee, poop, and mate all through the same hole, the cloaca.
Oh.
They don't have differentiated organs for any of that stuff.
Oh, I just learned something new today. Yeah. I just learned about chicken vaginas.
Cloacas. There's no such thing as chicken vag or really chicken butt. So even that what chicken butt doesn't really make any sense.
It's cloaca.
It should be what chicken cloaca, which cloaca does not work. It doesn't flow off the tongue like it should.
I just learned something about chickens. I've never eat out of the butt of a chicken. I'm just gonna stay away from that dark meat. So yeah, we were having this debate about, like, it started off whether or not they'd be shooting blanks, and then we made a lot of pew 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 jokes. But then we went on to debating whether or not they were actually fertile. I was saying they were. Kristen, you say they probably aren't, so they're not a distraction.
Yeah, I would definitely argue that it would be. There's no reason to have your clones reproducing. They're getting made in a factory. And do baby clones, and if there's baby clones, do they grow up twice as fast like grown clones, like real clones? You know what I mean?
Don't
so,
they need like hormones to mature fast too?
I would say
pump them through twice as much of the hormones.
I don't know how they did it in a galaxy far, far away, but... You know, basically that they said that Boba was the only exact duplicate of Jango. He was the only one that was like, you know, a true clone of Jango Fett. The rest of them were all tweaked and redesigned. So that would be one of the things I would design in it, because you're not looking to the clone. And, you know, a clone with a family is less likely to fight to the death than a clone with no family, I would assume.
I think having loved ones and having that, like, idea of, like, wanting to return to something would make you fight harder. You know, you would fight harder to make sure you did go home.
Yeah, but then again, you want to see your family again. and fighting for someone, that's what happens in a platoon. That becomes your family. You know, it strengthens the rest of the army as your family, other than another family.
Next time with the episode, because Rex even says that in the episode, that my brothers are my family.
Yeah, it was funny because you said, oh, I got to put that in one of the shows. And I'm like, well, I'm sure it'll come up in general discussion. And you're like, oh, I already put it in the notes. And it turns out this is the perfect episode
to discuss it.
For that discussion to come up, yeah.
Though, I do agree that they are probably tweaking stuff like that. We do know that the Bad Batch was tweaked, and a lot of it was just because they were running out of genetic material to use.
Right.
So we do know, like, there was the Bad Batch, but I do think these, like, earlier clones, before they started tweaking it and had to start cutting corners, like people like Rex and Wolf and Fives and Cody and stuff like that, I think they're all still fertile. I would argue that later clones towards the end of the world aren't, because we know that they had to be tweaked because they were running out of stuff. Because I feel like it would just be too much of a hassle to treat... they wouldn't be fertile because, you know, Cut LaQuain says it'd be against the rules to have children. They wouldn't have a rule if it hadn't happened.
Mm.
If they weren't fertile.
That's a good point.
Yeah. But that's... We'll see. Would you discuss it in the episode more?
Oh yeah, clone nads will come up again. Clone dicks will rise again.
Yeah, rising clone dicks. All right, well, I'm ready to get into this one. Are you?
Oh, let's do it.
All right, so The Deserter is the 32nd episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on January 1st, 2010, concluding a two-part storyline. Once again, Happy New Year, 2010. It was directed by Robert Dalva and written by Carl Ellsworth, Drew Z. Greenberg, and Brian Larson. I tend to find myself liking Brian Larson's episodes a lot more. I can't talk. I'm so distracted by clone nads now. Some extra episode information for you. The original episode guide slideshow mistakenly displayed an image of Hardcase without his helmet on, attending to Rex after he had been shot off his speeder. In the episode, it was Kix, the team medic, who stopped to attend to Rex and his helmet remained on. You can see this image on the Wikipedia for the episode page. In the episode featurette, Dave Filoni said, "We came across an opportunity where Rex could play a game, and we went, why not the Dejarik? He said it, and I meant to put it in memory. Dejarik. It's now going to be Dejarik, guys, the hollow table.
Dejarik sounds as good as anything else.
Dejarik. He said it very specifically, and I meant to put it to my brain.
Space chess, that's what I'm calling it from now on.
Space chess.
That's what I've always called it.
We came across an opportunity where Rex could play a game, and we went, why not the Dejarik table? I mean, there's even an action figure of Chewbacca with the table. We were doing this thing where we saw Chewbacca and R2 do, so of course we did. There's all this history about this one thing. We had to recreate it. I knew they would look very. I knew it would get looked at very closely. We had to make sure we had all the right buttons. We had all the same number of squares. We recreated the monsters. We even made the decision to make them move like stop motion characters. The way Phil Tippett had done it, I love the little motions where they're a bit herky jerky when they move. I thought that's how the game worked as a child. It's how the server was processing the information. We did so it looked just like that. We were all excited and thrilled about it. And I just know. I know the whole time we do that, when George sees it, I know he's going to go, what he's going to say. He'll go, you can make it smoother. Why would you not make it smoother? And I was just like, but that's just the way that the game, that's the way that it moves. Sometimes I think he's fascinated by our ability to, as a crew, to be such fans when we recreate stuff.
And it's funny because that's what they did in The Force Awakens when they brought back the table. They built clay figures and animated them to get that feel. Yeah,
I did not know
they
that.
Went to quite a bit of work to totally recreate the whole feel of how they did it originally.
We're all such nerds, Star Wars nerds.
They went Force Awakens took it another step beyond Clone Wars.
Maybe someone was like, if we don't keep, we're gonna get like episode 23, and they're still gonna have a herky-jerky hollow chess table.
Yeah, I hope so.
Because nobody's gonna be like, everybody's gonna be like, well, I don't wanna mess up the cycle. Because, you know, well, like,
people are buying old, they just put out a new Atari 2600 console with a bunch of the games loaded in it, and Sega Genesis and stuff like that. People still want to play the old herky-jerky games, you know? It's like checkers, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be. That's part of the game, is it's herky, you know, the charm of one of those tables is that it's looks like that.
I can see them get to, like, episode 18 and that someone makes, like, a perfectly smooth table with, like, no herky-jerkiness and fans just lose their fucking shit.
It's like, what the hell is this?
It's supposed to be claymation and stop motion, and then they'll never do it again, and it'll be like, what's a failed game system? My mind just blanked. It'd be like any failed game system, and then they go back to the original.
Sega Dreamcast.
You know who's casting my dreams tonight? Yeah, we have to work on this one, though, Yoda, because this one's
worse than Freddy Krueger.
Oh, I just imagine Yoda dressed as Freddy Krueger with a little, like, instead of, like, knives
sweater.
Like, instead of, like, little, like, knives for fingers, he has, like, little dildos, and he's just like, come here, little Padawan!
Yeah, that's a nightmare in his little hat. Yeah.
I'm gonna haunt your dreams tonight! Don't jerk off!
Yoda's your new boyfriend now! I just had to watch that movie for the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror, so I can... I could see Yoda with his arms stretched out like spaghetti, walking down the dark alley, scraping his claws. All right.
Come here, Dooku!
One, two, Yoda coming for you.
You're gonna lose your voice before you get to the actual platitude.
Three, four, run to Mandalore.
Anyway. Yeah, we know what we're all here for. It's space platitude time.
Yeah.
All right, here it comes.
It is the quest for honor that makes one honorable. In bed.
Yoda, you could have done better with that one.
Yeah.
You could have found a better fortune cookie this one. You could have done something like, you know, the free will is only free when one chooses to embed.
It's another one that even without the embed on it, it doesn't really, I don't really see it as being part. I can apply it to this episode, but I could find better things to apply to this episode, you know?
Yeah. Like, I would rather do something like, you know, like maybe like the choice of freedom or
right.
something like that.
Right. It was something about choice. Definitely was the big theme in this one. And yeah, you know, both of them made the honorable choice, but yeah. I would have put choice in there rather than
I mean, I would have even been happier with something like Grievous made Obi-Wan look like a punk ass bitch in bed.
Yeah.
This was actually a much better Grievous episode than the last Grievous episode.
It was. But I don't count it as a Grievous episode as much, but
I know. Like, this is definitely a Rex episode, but
it
is all, like, a world's better Grievous episode than last week was a Grievous episode.
Yes, I agree.
Do you agree, Grievous?
Oh, I did.
Oh, I did it.
Whoa.
Okay. Act one. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, because guys, buckle in. This is going to be a long episode. Just letting you know now. Act one. Following the events of last episode, General Grievous has crash-landed on the planet of Seleucumi. Now Obi-Wan is hunting for the general with the help of Commander Cody, Captain Rex, and a squadron of clones. Grievous has survived the crash and realizes that they need to get off this planet ASAP. Then Obi-Wan's ship flies overhead. Grievous heads for the only escape pod that survives and hope it has a communicator. Our heroes head for the crash site of the landing fleet so not to split up their troops. Obi-Wan sees the crashed ship. Poor little battle droids, they're all slowly diving, and Grievous don't got time for that. At the crash site, Cody sees the engines are still warm. The crash didn't happen too long ago. Obi-Wan sends Rex with Kix, Jesse, and Hardcase to split up and search the area. Cody comments that Rex is a smart man, and Obi-Wan adds that he's always thinking on his feet. Rex takes his men and heads out on speeders. Out in the plains, a group of sniper droids spot our clones. One takes a shot and shoots Rex off his speeder. Jesse and Hardcase race ahead to take out the droids. Kix returns to Rex and sees that he's badly injured. Obi-Wan finds a droid. Cody and the clone and a clone commander named Blondie. Okay, his name is Cries, but he probably sobs over how terrible his hair looked. Yeah, I was like, Cries? That was the first time I ever went, oh my god, what is that clone wearing? That's the first time I've ever done that. Analyze the droid to find that other pods had crashed, but only one survived. That's the trail, and Obi-Wan intends to find it. Where Rex is terribly wounded as Jesse and Hardcase return to Kix. Jesse is now in command with Rex out of commission. He realizes they need to find better cover for Kix to treat Rex. Then they notice a pack of animals approach them, and Jesse realizes that they're domesticated. There must be a farm nearby. They take Rex to a farmhouse where they are met with a hostile Twi'lek woman named Sue. The clones don't want trouble, just tend to Rex overnight. Her two kids, Shia and Jack, run out and get shooed back inside. Sue offers them a barn in the back. Rex wakes up from that night as Kix finishes treating his wounds, but he's going to have to stay there overnight to rest up. Rex don't want no part of that bullshit, but Kix pulls his rank on him. As team medic, he now has all the orders, and he outranks Rex now. Kix shyly requests an order for Rex to relax, which is actually one of my favorite parts. He's just like, just lay down, don't shoot me. Sue interrupts with some food for the men. Shia's ball gets away from her, and she chases it into the barn. Seeing a very confused Rex, she mentions, "You look like my daddy." Sue mentions her husband and his way, taking their harvest to the market. She leads them. Rex assigns Jesse to command to resume the search without him. That night, Rex gets an animal kiss to wake him up like the sleeping beauty he is. And later, he hears someone enter the barn. Rex pulls out his blasters to find the intruder to be another clone. Woo!
It's a long first act.
Yeah, I know, because I was thinking about it. I thought the break originally was when he gets shot. But really, this is a four-act episode. And I did debate breaking it into four acts, because you have the opening until he gets shot, meeting Sue and the kids, their talk in the middle, and then the fight at the end on both sides. Like, so really, this is a four-act episode.
Yeah, but I just split it up by commercial breaks whenever I saw it. So it still had the three commercial breaks, but man, it was like 10 minutes at the... More than 10 minutes at the top.
Yeah, it was right about 10 minutes, yeah.
It's a pretty long first act, like the half the episode almost.
So, what did you... And the thing is, the other two acts are so loaded, too!
Yeah.
This is such a loaded episode, I love it so much. What did you think of Act 1?
Well, we got two more New Hope quotes in this one. The one of the life forms approaching from the east and the west... is right out of when Luke's about to get attacked by the Tusken Raiders, and of course the space chess, as we mentioned earlier. I love the griping droids.
We're tired.
You just hear, like, as they're coming in on his ship here, and they get extra bitchy voices. And they're just little snots when they're getting snippy at Grievous. It's awesome.
Well, you could let us ride on the animal.
Yeah. and I like when Rex gets a McCoy pulled on him. That's what McCoy used to pull on Kirk all the time. Guess what? I trump your captain's orders with an order to take a shot of this and go to bed.
Like I said, I really love that moment, because, like, Kix is such a, like, a sweet... Like, out of all the people, like, the clones we meet from the 501st, like, he's kind of... I don't want to say the shyest, but he's definitely, like, not the most rambunctious. Like, Jesse and Hard K is and Heavy and Fives are all just like, yeah, let's go fuck shit up! And he's just like, guys, don't get hurt, guys.
That's why he's a medic, I bet. I know. His personality, when they did personality tests on him, they were like, yeah, you're a medic.
And he's like, okay. He probably did something like, that sounds lovely.
And the CG is getting better and better. The shots where they have stuff happening in the moonlight is really nice in this. It looks like moonlight.
I only had one issue with the CG in this episode. And it's in Jesse's conversation with Sue, because he's not wearing his helmet. And he looks good in every other scene, except for that one. And his head, I think it's because he doesn't have any hair. His head's, like, perfectly, like, almost a square. It's so blockish. But it's only that one scene. Cause, like, everybody else looks good, and he looks good for the rest of the episode, too. But that's every time I see that scene, I'm just like, oh, Jesse. Honey, no. Stop it.
They just might have, somebody forgot to clean up that one shot.
Yeah.
Slipped through the cracks. I didn't catch it. I'll have to go back and see if I can find it.
Yeah, that's always one that always, like, sticks out in my head. Just, like, when I think of, like, bad animation in Clone Wars, like, I always think about that scene, because I'm just like, oh, God, Jesse, hon. No.
But that's about all my notes for the first part.
Are you ready for my wall of pain?
I figured I'd leave some room for all the Rexiness coming.
Actually, I talked a lot about the other clones in this one, too. So, first and foremost, I recently bought the book that has the short story, The Crimson Corsair and the Lost Treasure of Count Dooku, on it. And the reason I want to talk about it is it features Kix, who made his first appearance in this episode. And he becomes a clone character to watch throughout Clone Wars, because we found out in that short story that he made it to the Force Awakens timeline. And what ended up happening, like, he personally was the lost treasure of Count Dooku that all these bounty hunters and these pirates were trying to find. And the reason he was there was because, after certain events that happened later on, he was saying that the Republic was a conspiracy. And Count Dooku was like, you need to be quiet now. And so he cryogenically froze him and then sent him out on a ship and just sent him out into space just to hop around place to place. Well, what ended up happening, they were just, like, pretty much stayed in hyperspace, like, forever, and just went in circles around the galaxy. And his ship ended up getting injured, and it crashed. And so all these bounty hunters and pirates were like, fuck it, that's Count Dooku's ship! Let's go get it! He used to collect Jedi shit! Let's get it! And when they got there, they found Kix, and he was all like, oh my god, the Republic is bad! And they're like, dude, the Republic ended, like 20 years, like, 30, 40 years ago. And he was like, no! So then Kix became a fucking pirate!
Oh.
I know!
Why didn't Dooku just kill him?
Because, what is it? Oh, actually, I'm about to quote a line from Sherlock, and the reason I literally watched this episode, dead men get attention. You had to discredit him and send him away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, dead men just get attention, so... But Kix does become a very important character, along with Jesse and Hardcase. So I really like that all three of them were introduced in this episode, because all three, Jesse and Hardcase, both play big roles in Season 4.
Oh.
So, yeah, Jesse especially. Hardcase, more minor, but Jesse plays a huge role, especially in the Umbara arc. That's, oh, I love him in Umbara. It's so great. Let's see. Kix wins the award for coolest clone hair. It's always been my favorite style. Also, like, shaved into his head, like, all the little things. He has an Arabish tattooed on the side of his head. A good droid is a dead droid.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what, on the side of his head, that's what's written there. It says a good droid is a dead one. But I love Kix's hairstyle. It's always been my favorite. And one silly note, about Jesse's face tattoo with the big-ass Republic symbol on it. I hope he died in the war, because I bet he had a hard time living in the Empire with a big Republic symbol stuck to his face.
Exactly.
Now, some of my other ones. I know that the timelines wouldn't match up for their ages, but the first time I saw this episode, I actually thought Shia and Jeff were Cut's kids. Because so far, all the Twi'leks we've seen have been solid colors, like Hera, Sue, Sham, and we even seen kid Twi'leks, and they're all just one solid color. But Shia, especially, she has, like, this pinkish on her face. And so it's almost like a human pinkish mixed in with her the rest of her color. So I always thought they were half Twi'leks. But, of course, like, that wouldn't match the timelines because we're only about a year into this war. And so I also later found out that Cut had actually adopted these kids.
Oh!
He's his adopted parents. Because, keep in mind, they were only about a year into the war, and the first battle of Geonosis, so they would have to be babies to be his kids.
Oh, I thought I was going to lose this Nat argument.
No.
Interesting.
Yeah, but, like, her coloring is so weird compared to, like, every other Twi'lek child we see in the series. So, yeah, I was
wondering
that.
That's why I thought she was colored like that, because I thought that she was half Twi'lek, half clone.
No, I remember, I thought that for years, and then I put two and two together about the timeline, and I also read on the Wikipedia they were adopted. So, though I kind of wonder where Sue's first husband went then. Maybe he was killed on Ryloth or something. But I also love all the interactions between the clones with Cut's family. Like, the clones are just so polite and kind to the kids, they're kind to Sue, they're very grateful to Sue. And it's really different from what we saw, like, Waxer in the Ryloth arc, and calling them all tailheads and stuff like that. Like, the clones, for the most part, are really, really super nice men, and they deserve so much better than this life, because they're all big heroes, they're all big sweeties, and they all deserve to be happy to have half-Twi'lek children.
Or to end up in retirement.
Fishing for Jupas. Big old Jupas. Okay, so here's my big thing. So, The Deserter, as you guys know, I write season reviews of Clone Wars on What the Fangirl, and The Deserter was my number one pick of season two. In my best of art. And so, since it's written out much nicer and I didn't want to have to rewrite everything I was going to say, I just copied and pasted straight from my work. So, this is part of it. So, here we go. Obi-Wan recognizes Rex's individuality as both a leader and as a person. He goes so far to say, to agree with Cody, who states that Rex is a smart man. Obi-Wan adds that Rex is always thinking on his feet. Certain Jedi clearly trust their commanders and captains. I mentioned this in the season one recap. It's a shame to get to know Cody under Obi-Wan's relationship. It's a shame to get to know Cody and Obi-Wan's relationship throughout the show, only for Cody to participate in Order 66, the Purge of the Jedi Order. Anakin and Ahsoka clearly trust Rex with their lives. Plo Koon relies on Commander Wolf as his right hand. So on and so forth. You know, the old saying that if something is so good to be true, it has to be, if something is too good to be true, it usually is not good. Wow, I wrote that.
Try it out again.
I know, right? We see that this trust gets betrayed way later on in the series. Season 6, there's a major incident that is a huge game changer to the clone-Jedi relationship. Until then, let's just enjoy the happy feelings. So I like that moment. The reason I put this in, because I really like that moment with Obi-Wan. Like, Rex isn't his captain, you know, like, Cody is his captain and stuff like that. But, I mean, after working with him all this time and stuff, Obi-Wan still recognizes that Rex is a good man. And it's not that he's a good captain. He even says he's a good man. Like, mm-hmm. Cody says he's a good man. And that's just such a nice moment to me that they're looking past the captainness. They're not going like, oh, he's the best captain we have. There's a reason the 501st doesn't have a commander. They're going, no, he's a good man as a human being.
Which directly comes into the episode.
Yeah. So, my feelings. I have so many feelings for this episode. Did you have anything else for season one?
I'm ready to go on to the next part.
Me too, especially since I said season one and we've been done with that for like 8 episodes.
I know what you meant.
Thank you for knowing what I meant. All right. Act 2. Rex barks at the clone what his number and rank is, but the clone replies, "My name is Cut Laquane, and I'm just a simple farmer." Rex calls him a deserter, and Cut says he's exercising his right to choose a life for himself. Yes, he has his duty, but it's not to the Republic anymore. It's to his family. Shia and Jack run into the barn with Sue behind. He has a cute interaction with his kids and asks Rex for his number and rank. Rex, though, responds with his name instead. Cut invites him to dinner, and Rex only accepts after Cut's kids beg him to join. At dinner, Cut and Rex have an interesting debate. Cut says that they might be clones and look alike, but they're still individuals. He asks Rex why he chooses a name and doesn't go by his number. Rex says that it's more sufficient, and Cut rebuttals, "What's more efficient than a number?" Sufficient. Why did I write sufficient? I meant efficient. Cut says that a name makes you unique in an army where everyone looks the same. Rex cuts him off right away, becoming uncomfortable in this conversation. He says that he never thought about it, but Cut says that he knows that Rex has thought it over since they are alike genetically. He knows that Rex has thought about a life outside the army and what would happen if he left. Rex responds that he's choosing the life he wants because he wants to protect the Republic so that their children and their children's children doesn't have to live under evil. Cut says that if Rex did have children, that would be against the rules. Rex shuts it down, saying that it's what he believes regardless of it, of if it's his children or someone else's children, and Cut ends with, "To each their own." Grievous has found the crashed escape pod and sends out a distress signal. With Kenobi moving in, he gets ready for the battle. Back at the farm, Rex and Cut play Dejerik Hollow Chess together. Cut reveals what made him leave the army. Shortly after the first battle of Geonosis, his ship was attacked and went down. The droids started picking off the injured one by one, so he ran. If he would have stayed, Cut would have been killed too. Cut realized that his life didn't have meaning in a war, especially fighting in a conflict he didn't choose. He was forced to fight because he was told to. Rex understands having lost many brothers in the war. They were his home. Shia and Jack want to play outside, in the dark, because that's such a smart idea. Cut agrees and sends them out. Rex says that his children are wonderful. Cut admits that Rex probably sees him as a coward, but he'll fight to the last breath to protect his family.
I noticed that for story-wise and the future-wise, that they, you know, made sure that Rex was the only clone there who met the escaped clone, you know,
yeah.
Or the deserter clone, yeah, because it would have opened up a whole new story-wise can of worms to have other clones there of, like, arguing with Rex over whether they should turn him in or some of the other clones getting the bug in their ear that maybe deserting might not be such a bad thing, you know.
Especially, like since we know where Kix goes from after this, like, having someone there, like Kix or Jesse, who do play those big roles later on, having them there.
Right.
They might have started that later.
They keep it a lot simpler by just having Rex be the only one there. I was thinking to myself when I watched this, boy, this solves a clone Nads problem, but I guess it doesn't, since they're adopted kids, so we can still battle over that, debate over that. Yeah, man, the droids get even more bitchy as they get as they get lower in power. I just love that scene. Did you detect when you know he's talking about, you know, why he deserted and stuff? You know, maybe that there's another layer of PTSD story going on or two.
Oh, easily, because he even says it haunts me at night.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, they're shading in the clone PTSD thing even more in this, very lightly, but it's there. And I was early last time. This is the act that had the Star Wars life forms approaching and the chess. Although those droids aren't really life forms.
Yeah.
But whatever. Whatever.
Let me get my shallow notes out of the way first before I get into the really thick of this. This is such an important arc because Rex is starting to find his individuality. It's the little things too, like for example, when Cut asks for his number in Rake, he chooses to respond with Rex. Like he makes the choice of like, oh, I'm Rex. I'm not a number in rank. And we definitely see this come up again in Umbara when Krell is sitting there going CTU 7567. Like he calls him CTU 7567, and he's like, my name is Rex. Stop it. I'm Rex. Thanks, man. And then, of course, they get punked, but whatever. So I do like that we're getting a little bit of that. Can I say that I love Rex's little turtleneck sweater under... It's his undershirt for his armor, and it's a little turtleneck sweater, and I love it.
It would have to be to keep all the edges of your helmet and collar from digging into you.
I know, but it's so cute. It is so cute. Like, he is ready to go out for a snow day. And he's going to go out and be like, guys, let's play Million Rank Snowmen. And they'll build all these little snowmen, and they'll shoot them all with their blasters. They'll make little snow droids.
They'll make snow angels.
Because they're all little angels. They're
from the moons of Viego or something.
Yeah, it's actually exactly right. You guys look like angels. They do look like angels. Another shallow note. I never noticed how, like, ripped Cut's arms are. Like, those are some nice animated arm muscles. Like, you could say that he's Cut.
Oh!
No, but seriously, like, my uterus was like, hello, Cut's arms.
Wait, what? We're watching TV. Whoa, hey, hello.
So going back to our dick debate, ready?
Okay.
Rex says that their children might have to live under this evil, so can he have children? And Cut even says that clones having children is against the rules. So I think that clones do totally have dicks and can have children.
Maybe. They could have been just theoretically talking about children or adopted children.
But then why would they have a rule against children if they couldn't have children?
Well, this guy had children that he didn't make with his penis.
That's true. Oh, they're very cute. I just like to think of like how...
They don't say you can't have penis children.
But still, like, they wouldn't have a rule if it wasn't a thing.
I guess not, yeah.
Unless maybe they could have also made the rule preemptively, not knowing if clones were fertile or not.
And maybe one gets through every once in a while, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe they shoot blanks and... It's like Russian roulette. Like, there's one good one.
Every thousand, yeah.
Oh, but think how cute, like, half-clone kids would be. They'd be adorable.
You could have found out, Hope. You had your chance to find out.
When?
When Boba was all up in your business.
I was like... young at the time, and I'm pretty sure he was fairly drunk, so I'm pretty sure he was still drunk the next morning. I don't know what episode it is, but see earlier episode for that conversation.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Let me take a drink because I'm about to do a lot of reading, kids. All right, so this is the other chunk that I took out of What the Fangirl. And it's long, but it pretty much sums up this entire act for me. Ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
Are you ready?
I guess so. It's three paragraphs. Why did I do this myself? All right. Cut and Rex are the highlight of this episode. Unlike Slick's portrayal in Season 1, where he believes that the Jedi were slavers to his clone brothers, Cut left the war when he saw there was no point. He was in a horrific battle where droids were shooting the wounded. If he hadn't left, he would have been killed. He even admits that the war never made sense to him, especially when he watched his brothers die with no hope. Cut met his wife Sue, adopted her two children, and accepted this new quiet life as a farmer. Unlike Slick, who betrayed his brothers, Cut left for the right reasons. His duty is to his family. This is where Cut and Rex are both similar and different. They're men who have the same principles, but have huge incentives to fight. Rex fights for the Republic he loves. He wants to protect his clone brothers. He wants to support his Jedi leaders. Cut, on the other hand, walked away from his old life and his family of clone brothers. Protecting his new family now is his personal war. While they have different reasons, essentially Rex and Cut are fighting for the same thing. Do you want to do any counterpoint before I go on?
No, I don't really have anything to say against that.
Or for it or anything?
No, I pretty much agree with the last statement, and I'll have the court put that down in the record.
All right. Cut and Rex have a particularly interesting conversation about individuality, which is the next step in Rex's journey throughout the show. It starts when Cut asks Rex for his assigned clone number. The captain immediately states that he also has a name like Cut. If this was any other clone trooper, they would have more likely given their number. This isn't just anyone. This is Rex, the amazing hero beginning his journey for a series-long story arc. Choosing to go by his name instead of his number is a huge step in an army which is cloned to be the same. The clones are supposed to be disposable. They're pretty much slaves to the Republic in a way. Slick wasn't that far off, as we see in later Season 6. But then why did the clones choose to change their hair? Why get various tattoos or paint their armor to distinguish themselves? It's because every clone sees themselves as an individual. They are their own person. Some clones do blindly follow orders, but what makes the 501st Legion clones special in this series is the fact that they choose individuality. Cut makes Rex question his individuality and his uniqueness. He points out Rex probably has wondered what his life would be like if he wasn't a soldier. Rex shoots this down, stating that he would still choose to fight. He's not quite ready to admit that he's different from the rest of the clones in the army. We see in later seasons, Rex embraces his name, title, individuality, and the leader of being the 501st. As of right now, our lovely clone captain isn't ready to change, though his paradigm is shifting, seeing that Cut can have a family and peace outside the war.
True that.
Though I was wondering as I was reading it, it kind of hit me. Do you think that what makes the 501st so different is Anakin?
It might be Anakin's influencing the clones into being more individual. It's very much sort of like the arguments between Kirk, Spock, and McCoy in Star Trek of logic and emotion and, you know, human foibles being important to decision making, you know, that everything can't be logical. So having them, they have a sort of controlled individuality. You know, they can only be so individual until they become like Cut. Cut becomes individual enough to where it's against the rules.
Or Slick, for that matter.
Right. So, but, you know, having different names and haircuts and decorating your, that's all stuff you would think that they would encourage to make, you know, to give the people some outlet of expression, you know, at least something to make themselves feel like an individual person. And you would want a little bit of both of that aspect of the cloniness, of them being individuals and having their own strengths and personality points, and also the ability to function as a team also.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think the individuality probably makes you a better clone. You know, the more individual you are, the more probably you can be formed into a better fighter, I would think.
I would also use the example of that Anakin is one of the key factors, and I would use the example of Ahsoka. Look at other Padawans like Barriss. Barriss was pretty much a lot like a carbon copy of Luminara.
They're like little Jedis, except for Nadir.
Yeah, Nadir was, I feel like, is an outlier. Because even, Kanan was very much a Jedi. He followed Depa Bialba's orders. Like, he did everything by orders and stuff. And it wasn't until Order 66 that he was like, oh my god, I literally fucking know nothing about the world.
Right.
But Ahsoka went through the same thing. And, like, while we know from the Ahsoka Untold panels thing that she struggled... She struggled a lot because she was a teenager in the world. At least she had better equipment to... I feel like Ahsoka did better in the real world than Kanan did in the real world. Kanan, like, pretty much nearly starved to death.
Yeah, I think Kanan was... He was a little younger than Ahsoka, wasn't he?
Yeah, a little bit. Not by much, though.
He did not seem to be as battle-tested as Ahsoka was. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And we gotta keep in mind, this is he's from Mace Windu's line, so maybe Depa Bialba focused on things differently from what Anakin focused on teaching Ahsoka, but, like, even then, we talked about, like, how does Ahsoka, like, know so much about tech stuff? Well, she says, my master taught me about ships, my master taught me how to make a communicator into a distress beacon, my master taught me these things. So I think, like, Anakin really is a key factor of why the 501st is so different.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, because we're skipping ahead a little bit, but when Pong Krell shows up in Umbara, he was like, oh, the 501st, you guys are all such, like, you're no one. And even Yularen, like, when all the clones were like, yeah, let's take walkers into space, it'll be great, Yularen was like, that's not regulations.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The ones who get, they're the reputation for the ones who get things done, so there you go. It also, you know, having a good reputation affords you a little slack, too.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I want to hear what you think about this. I don't have this in my notes, but what do you think is, because they both essentially left for similar reasons, you know, because they saw the corruption in the war in the galaxy. So what do you think are the similarities and differences between Cut and Slick? I'm sorry, I'm springing this question on you.
Yeah, I mean, Slick was angry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was not, you know, he went anti-clone, whereas this guy, he has no problem with, the clones doing what they do, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas Slick took it personally, and Slick was like, you know, more of like the angry demonstrator type of personality, you know, where he's like, you know, he was, whereas this guy, I mean, it was, they obviously had different philosophies because, you know, Cut was just like live and let live, you know, you choose to do this, you do this. The other, you know, Slick was like brothers and sisters, you gotta, well, not sisters, but brothers, you gotta get free of this, you know, you're being enslaved, you know, that sort of thing. He was more of he wasn't really that was his rationale, you know, when confronted. He wasn't actually trying to lead a clone rebellion, but I don't know. You know, Cut is definitely not a bad seed, you know?
Yeah.
So could it be that Slick's, you know, was, you know, just that was part of what was one of the funky things that came out of his particular genetics or whatever. But
we also know that Ventress got to him, too. Like, Ventress somehow got to him and, like, coaxed him over.
Yeah, but you gotta have a seed of that in order to coax him over. You know, yeah. She played upon the anger that was already there. I don't think that you could get Cut to do the same, you know, to be the same way, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think you could probably pay Cut to get involved with any other clone antics at all, you know, good or bad. If it was like, yeah, you got to come back and help us fight this battle, I don't think he'd be into it, you know?
Yeah. I do think they have similar views, but like you said, I don't think they're a similar person. Though, when you said, Miss said, clone brothers and sisters, you just made me really sad because you reminded me of this conversation I had on Tumblr one time about, like, how if there was any clones who were, like, transgender clones, like, they felt like they were women, they would probably be sent back to Kamino and tested on for being defective. And that made me really sad, thinking about that. If any clones were just like, I identify being a woman, they'd probably be tested on as defective.
Yeah, that might have been, yeah. That might have been one of the things they were trying to genetically, well, I don't know.
It's
just another cut. Yeah, I'm sure they would not encourage it just because it would not be conducive to fighting, I guess.
Yeah, because
it would be another distraction.
Because I've mentioned it before, but the webcomic Star Wars Destinies, the artist also has like a side blog where she just like does sketches and doodles, and she created this one clone that she named Dusty, and it was a transgender clone, and like after the war, like Dusty like grew her hair out and like would wear pretty dresses, and I was just like, you're so beautiful. I was like, oh man, she's so pretty. And she's like, yeah, the sad thing is I don't think Dusty makes it to this point. I was like, what do you mean? She's like, well, when the Republic found out that she was transgendered and identified as a woman, they sent her back to Kamino to be defected. I was like, why did you say that?
I was just going to say, yeah, that's more of the person who wrote it than, you know, the actual Star Wars universe. But, okay.
But it was so pretty. Dusty was such a pretty clone. They, like, Fives was, like, braiding her hair and stuff. She
and
was
they
so
dipped pretty. Her in a vat of acid at the end.
Yes.
I think that writer was being manipulative. They put her in a hamburger grinder and ground her up.
Okay, I just want to say, listeners, that we are in full support of transgender people. Chris is just being weird right now.
I'm just illustrating that. I don't know. Sometimes when people write a story like that, you know, that's kind of an emotionally manipulative. Oh, and by the way, they destroyed her because she was transgendered. It's just like, ah!
I know.
They made you feel good, and then they make you feel bad at the end of it.
Yeah.
The hell is that?
Yeah. Anyway, actually,
They could have made her live happily ever after. Wouldn't that have been a better fit if you're writing fan fiction? Why not go there?
I don't know. I've read some really, like, good emotional fan fiction that ended tragically. So I was just like, oh, God, John Watson, no. John Watson, Sherlock will be okay, but he's not. He actually did die at the building. Oh, God. did you have anything else for Act 2?
No, I'm ready for Act 3, the really okay. Short Act 3.
Yeah, but it's still pretty loaded, so.
Yeah.
All right, so Act 3. The battle erupts between Obi-Wan and Grievous. Outside on the farm, Jack and Shaiya come across a crashed ship in their field. It's a Separatist pod, and they accidentally activate the commando droids inside. The droids are a bit damaged, but still deadly. The kids go screaming back to the house, alerting the adults. Cut sees the trick commando droids coming and sends the kid and the Sue upstairs. Rex is ready to fight with him, but Cut turns him down. If Cut is killed, Rex is the last line of defense for Sue and the kids. Rex will take care of them. Cut locks down the house as the droids bust in the back door. They bust in through the window too, and as the battle shifts to Obi-Wan and Grievous. Obi-Wan shoots at the escape ship, but Obi-Wan's tanks then overheat. He didn't shoot. Obi-Wan's clones shoot at the escape ships. There we go. But Obi-Wan's tanks overheat. Obi-Wan goes for Grievous. Cut hears something moving under his house. The droids break through the floor and pin Cut under a falling beam. Rex is waiting and fires on some of the droids. Cut frees himself and fights with his bare hands. A droid shoots out the floor under Rex and he falls through. The last droid chokes him, but Cut shoots it down. Cut tells his family that he's okay and that the fight is over. But it's not over for Obi-Wan and Grievous, who throws his cape at Obi-Wan like Count Coffula. I love that moment. He's just like, phew. But as the ship comes around, Grievous shoots a cable up and flies off to escape again. Obi-Wan is bummed out indeed. The next morning, Captain Rex is ready to go, but Sue asks if he'll turn in cut. Rex says that it's his duty to turn him in, but since his injuries were so bad and everything, he probably forgot about the entire ordeal. Sue is elated in the news. Cut invites Rex to stay with them, but Rex has his own clone brothers and family to protect. He rides off into the sunset like the badass, beautiful mountain clone cowboy of sex he is.
Those are my two notes are, I love how Grievous throws his cape. It's such a quick scene, but it's just awesome. It's just like, that's why he has that cape. He uses it to just screw with people. And I love how in Star Wars in general, with all the technology and spaceships and speeder bikes and stuff we have, people often end up on the equivalent of horseback. You know, people often end up having to go from one place to another on the back of an, like, riding on some animal. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. So what did you think of this final act?
I liked it. It's, I thought... The thing about it, this is my only gripe with this episode, is I think this last act is really rushed, and I would have preferred if they would have done this story, say, as a two-parter, and had like a little bit of what happened last episode, and the beginning of this story, and then fleshed it out a little more.
Yeah.
Because this last part was so much more... visually put together well and story-wise put together well than the last one. I would have liked to have seen the last one just sort of get edited down and made a two-parter out of this one so we could have seen more of Cut's life or a little more of the planet. The visuals on the planet and the way everything flowed was really good, but the last act has to, like, tie everything up and, like, what is it, like, 4 minutes? It ties everything up in, like, 4 minutes or something like that. I remember looking at I'm watching it, and I'm like, whoa, how... I'm like, this has got to be almost over, but there's all this stuff still going on. I'm like, oh, my God, we only have 4 minutes left to resolve everything on this? This is going to go fast, escalate quickly.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Definitely, I didn't ever think about that, but, you know... Everything with Eeth Koth last episode, like, it was the first half of the episode. And we really didn't need a lot of that stuff. Like, yeah, it was cool to see Eeth Koth,
but... You could have done a Reader's Digest version of just how Grievous got down onto the planet in the first act of the last episode.
I'd be totally perfectly okay with them...
Oh, I'm sure you would.
Well, yeah, I would have been okay with them being opening the episode with, like... Oh no, Eeth Koth has been captured. It's up to Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin Skywalker with the help of this, I forgot her name, but the cool-haired Jedi lady to go save him. And start, like, right there at the halfway point, have that final fight with Grievous, and then have the second half of that episode introduce Cut and his family, and then have it be the long resolution, because, yeah, I never thought about that before. That would have made this a much better... Because that was actually one of my questions for you, is, like, this doesn't feel like a two-parter with last week. Yeah. It doesn't feel like one. And last week was so weak. And, like, while it was a lot about Grievous, it was a really weak episode. And this episode's all about Rex. It's very disjointed, and they're not really the thing, a two-parter.
The last episode was sort of an example of... I don't want to say it's a bad Clone Wars episode, but it has a little less content in it than this one does. And I don't even mean, like, stuff happening. It had plenty of stuff happening. But it was still just a sort of simple idea. But it was basically... just sort of like a set piece, a battle. You know, there wasn't... We didn't learn anything new about anybody's character or anything like this. This one has some subtext to it and some... You know, it's a little more interesting. It's a lot more interesting. It's,
yeah, I mean, I did
this is more of like what a classic Clone Wars episode is, because it's got some really good battle and visuals in it, but it's got a story to it with an idea behind it.
Like... Because I know I said last week, what I liked about it, it was kind of a breather, because we just went through the Geonosis arc, and it was so heavy and everything, and this is a pretty heavy episode, too. So it's nice having that breather episode, but, like, I agree, now that I actually, like, really think about it, like, we really didn't need last week's episode. They could have even started this episode with, like, We've chased Grievous, and his crash landed on Sulukumai. It's up to Obi-Wan Kenobi. I honestly felt like last week was just like, hey, we have Eeth Koth. I wish I could remember her name. The other Jedi lady. And they're just like, Galia, that's her name. Adi Galia. They're like, it really just felt like they were like, hey, we have Eeth Koth in Adi Galia. Let's introduce them. And let's have an episode with them. But even though they didn't do anything. Like, we don't really
learn.
I learned more about Eeth Koth and Adi Galia from reading their Wikipedia pages. Like, it wasn't explored in the actual episode, like, anything about their character. Like, we didn't... The Wikipedia, for example, said that Galia was a good pilot. She never flew a ship. It said that she was a very aggressive fighter. She was Anakin's backup for the entire episode. Like, we didn't learn anything about her. I would have much rather had a two-parter with Rex debating, like... the actual morality and individuality and the choices that clones can make. And actually, if it was a two-parter, I would love to see Jesse, Kix, and Hardcase stay and have that conversation of, like, well, do we have a choice? Like, and have, three of them with Rex talking about that in the barn, about whether or not they actually had a choice. That would have been a much better Clone Wars episode. And even Rex just going, we don't need to really think about this, guys. You know, we have the Republic. We have our brothers. Cut is an outlier, but, like, we are part of this big, big Grand Army scheme, and kind of talking them down and talking them out of it, and they all fight together. They could have had twice as many commando droids, all of them fighting together. It would have been an awesome battle sequence to have five clones versus a platoon of commando droids, and even having Sue kicking some ass. That would have been great. I would have loved to see Sue do more in this episode, too. Like, and seeing her point of view be like, you know, what is Sue's point of view? I'm ranting now. What is Sue's point of view in all this? Like, I would have loved to know more about, like, how him and Sue met, of her life previous, and how Cut has made her life better. Like, maybe, you know, we said, like, maybe her husband died on Ryloth. Maybe he was a piece of shit. Maybe he was, like, a rebel fanatic. Like, maybe he was, like, Sham Syndulla in Rebels, where he's just so fanatic with this fighting that she was like, I don't want this for my children, and she left. And then she found Cut, and I would love to know how they met. And, like, Cut made her life better, and, like, it would justify him leaving the war because it made her and her children's life better. Like, I would have just... Ah! She just made me rant! I'm good now. I'm good. I need coffee. I need coffee and a nap now. So what else did you think about this?
Those were basically my two notes for the last part. I would have liked it to have been more of a, like... this story in the first part and Grievous's cloak and horseback. That was about it.
This is what I like about us. Like, I'm the one that, like, goes, like, these are these deep character building moments, and you're just like, fucking horses.
I like him on the horse, yeah.
Poop shoots and Grievous smacking. He smacked a lot of droids in this episode.
Yes, he did. He even cut one right in half.
My favorite, it was just like, oh my god! And I was like, but droids don't have guns. Why did it scream, oh my god? Oh my god! It would have been great if it had been like, oh, Geonosis Maker!
Well, the Maker, that's what robots address.
Oh, the Maker!
Yeah, thank the Maker.
Or maybe something like, oh, the Poggle!
Yeah. Yeah, oh, Poggle would be a great droid curse.
Oh, Poggles. As I kind of mentioned earlier, I do kind of wonder, like I said, I wonder how long Cut and Sue have been together. It's only been about a year, and his ship went down shortly after the first Battle of Geonosis, and we said during the second Battle of Geonosis episodes that we felt it was only about 9 months to a year, had passed. So I did wonder, once again, how long those two have been together. To add to what a great hero Rex is, he automatically fights with Cut to protect his family from the droids who infiltrated the farm. And what I like is that he sees that Cut is not a coward, and in the end, he chooses not to turn Cut in as a deserter because they're essentially fighting for the same thing, and he lets him live in peace with his family.
Yeah, I mean, Rex breaks some rules, you know. He's really getting himself potentially in trouble by not turning him in. So that's really saying something.
Oh, God, I kind of wonder what would happen if someone else ever found out about Cut.
Court-martial.
Yeah. Or maybe he would have just been sent to Kamino with Dusty to be destroyed. Because, I mean, defecting like that, it would probably, by the Kaminoans, be seen as a defect. Be like, oh, you don't want to be with your brothers? You're defective. Go. So... All right, my final thing was, I have a question for you, Chris.
Okay.
If they ever wanted to do a live-action Clone Wars arc, or wanted to bring Kix into Episode 8, because we do know that he made it to that timeline, do you think they would keep, I'm so sorry, I'm about to butcher your name, Temuera Morrison, who was the role of the clones in Episode 2 and 3, or do you think that they would cast somebody else? And if they did recast it, who would you like them to pick for the role of clones?
No, they could cast it. I think they would. At first, I was like, yeah, they wouldn't want to cast it as him, but they would because, A, he was older. He was an older version of the clones. And, you know, I mean, Jango himself was a little older looking than the clones. So that actor by now has aged probably enough to where he could reasonably look around the same age, and why wouldn't you want to use them, you know?
Now, okay, let's break this up in two things. If they brought Kix into Episode 8, yes, I could see this, but also Kix was cryogenically frozen, so he didn't age.
Oh.
But if they decided to do a live-action Clone Wars movie, he would be older now.
Right.
So, but that's just my counter-argument. But if they did, like, maybe, like, out of cryogenically freezing, like, age, Kix just started, like, double aging and stuff like that, I could totally see them bringing him back for the role.
Yeah, I would, yeah.
Now, the other half of this, if they did recast him, who do you think they should pick to play clones?
Jeez, I have no idea. Tom Hardy's a good, really good actor who has a sort of generic face that you could make to look like a clone, and he's got the accent.
I was about to say, you don't tell that to my friend, because my friend is like, Tom Hardy is the most beautiful individual man ever.
Oh, so she would be very happy.
It's definitely a he, a very straight man he, who gets hard-ons for Tom Hardy.
Oh, okay. But he's like, Tom Hardy's, he's better looking, but he's very much like Gary Oldman, who can sort of disappear into a role, you know?
Mm.
Like, I don't really, like, have a good picture of Gary Oldman as himself. Maybe more now in his older age, but, like, through his career, I never could picture, like, bring up a picture of Gary Oldman, only his individual characters. And a lot of times I would see a movie, and at the end of it, I'd be like, oh my god, that was Gary Oldman in that?
Yep, I can agree with that. That's happened to me a lot about him, too.
So he could draw, he could do the role, really. I mean, he's a really good actor, and he would totally, like, sink himself into it, and you could probably get him to look like a clone.
Yeah. For Tom Hardy or Gary Oldman?
Tom Hardy. Gary Oldman's a bit too old, and Gary Oldman's a weird-looking guy, too. That's another weird thing about it, is he's not, like, sort of generic that you could put anything on. He's sort of got that weird, like, weird chin and stuff. And, no, he wouldn't have visually made a good Jango Fett, although you would have had to make him up, and that would be sort of, or, you know, a clone or whatever, but you would want somebody that would be sort of fairly naturally have that sort of prototype face that clones have. They don't have a very, you know, they're very much, they look like clones, you know? They look like sort of just a generalized human, if that makes any sense.
My answer will not surprise you in the least.
I figured you must have an idea if you were asking that question.
I was thinking about it. Dear listeners, we now have Two True Freaks TV, which is our YouTube channel. And I did a reaction to the Season 3 trailer for Star Wars Rebels. And in it, I name-checked my favorite actor, who is Michael Sacha, and I said that he should do something Star Wars, and it would make my, nerdvana, like, it would make my life complete if he ever did anything Star Wars. And then I started thinking, like, if they tanned him up, he would make a hell of a good-looking clone. He has the accent, he has the voice, he has the build. I could see Michael Sacha playing a clone, and I was like, Michael Sacha playing Rex! Oh my god! I think I would die, like, if I saw him in a live-action movie and he was playing Rex, I'd just be like, oh, there goes my ovaries. They're just I would literally explode in the theater and just be like, bam, and just be like, oh god, like that's all. I would die. I would just curl up and be like, well, I'm done with my life. Goodbye. Oh man, like, oh, he makes such a good clone. Oh, he makes such a cute kicks. Oh, he makes such a cute kicks in episode 8. But at the same time, he's only done really small roles. So if he did anything big, he'd be super famous. And then I would be even more unimportant than I am right now.
Oh my god.
No, he's like, right now at least he's doing small roles, so I feel somewhat important, but then I would be unimportant. I'd be even more, like, in the background, because then he would have a million fans, and I just want him to
It'll
write...
be all right, Hope. It'll be okay.
I just want him to write me back
on Getting Snapchat. Way ahead of yourself.
Write me back on Snapchat. That's all I want. Or something. I mean, I know he has control over his own social media and stuff, and he can do what he wants, but if someone says, hey, I hope you have a good day, there's nothing wrong with writing back, thanks, or something.
Yep.
Not making them feel like they're useless and have anxiety and stuff. That's mean, I guess. But he has control over his own Snapchat, so I really shouldn't complain. Oh, you're fine. I know I'm sad. I'm sad now. Well, let's talk about Rex again.
Yeah, that'll get it back on track.
Someone should just be like, hey, Mr. Soccer, you should listen to this podcast. Don't do that, please.
Well, I mean, are we ready to give our score?
Yes. What is your final thoughts on the episode, Chris?
I thought this was an excellent episode. I really liked it. I would have given it a 10 out of 10 because it covers a lot of the just basic meat of what they've been building the Clone Wars on and the idea of the clones. I docked it 1 point down to a 9, though, for having, you know, a rushed third act.
I can see that.
But still a 9, which is a really good high score for me, especially I haven't dropped a 9 in a while.
Yeah, I can't even remember the last 9 episode you dropped.
I might not have dropped a 9. I might have done a lot of 8s and a 10 here and there.
Yeah, I think this might be your first 9. I think you're right about that. I can't remember any of
it. No, but this is up there in my just general episodes. It's beautifully animated. It moves along.
Wait. It's just,
yeah.
Wasn't Bombad Jedi a 9 for you?
Yes, I think.
Oh my god.
For different reasons. There's different reasons for Bombad Jedi, but it doesn't matter. What pleases me. I can't help it.
I like that this is a 9 because it's a really good meaty episode, and Bombad Jedi was a 9 because it gave fanboys the finger.
Yeah, whatever. You know, I don't care how I get my gratification from it, as long as I get my gratification.
Get your Star Wars fix.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, for me, this is one of the most pivotal episodes of Clone Wars, hands down. This is everything that what makes the clones clones. We see Rex and Cut interacting together, debating individuality versus following orders. We see clones like Jesse, Kix, and Hardcase being kind to Sue and the kids. We see Cut choosing a new life for himself. And we even get some Jedi fights with Obi-Wan and Grievous. While this might not be the best starter episode because it builds on so much of the previous stuff in the last season and a half, it's one of the best episodes in the entire series, and it's incredibly important because it lays down plot lines for future seasons. Rebels, Rex is the way he is in Rebels because of episodes like this, and there's a reason Rex sides with the Rebel cell because of episodes like this. And it also introduces Kix, who survives through episode 7. So this is like such a pivotal turning point to Clone Wars. It's such an important episode. So for me, this is easily a perfect 10 out of 10. No questions asked.
Cha-ching.
This is probably my 10 for 10 episode of the season.
Well, we'll be seeing. I think we'll be seeing this episode again in both of our wrap-up of this.
Yeah, easily. This is, you know how last time we were just like, oh, these episodes, like some are better than others. And no, this is the best episode of season 2 to me.
You know, I don't exactly remember what's coming next, but we're about halfway through. And this one's, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a big, outside the Mandalore arc, the three-parter Mandalore arc, the rest of season two is okay to me. Like next weekend is lightsaber. I think next week is lightsaber loss, and it's like, oh no, Ahsoka has lost her lightsaber. And like after such a well done episode like this, I'm like, I don't care. Can we just do Mandalorians and go on to season three and be done? Actually, no, I take that back. Boba Fett does come into this season, and we do get.
Oh, does he come in this season?
Yes, it's the episode. Okay. It's the episode where he disguises himself as a cadet to try and assassinate Mace Windu. It's this season.
Yeah, for some reason I thought it was later, but yeah, I'm catching.
That's okay. I thought episode like one or two of this season, the Geonosis arc was in season three, and it was like two episodes later. So it's okay. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback, listeners, and you can leave us feedback by either writing us an iTunes review, which we would love because it helps people find the show, but we also have the Two True Freaks Facebook page. You can leave a comment on any of our episodes about that episode on the Facebook page, and this week we're going to mix it up a little bit. Literally about 10 minutes before we started recording this episode, I got feedback from my friend Anjali. Who I mentioned her a couple times, like in the Ryloth. Anjali is Indian, and the Ryloth arc, she said, like, when Waxer called them tailheads, it was actually like a derogatory thing for Indians and stuff like that as well. So I always love her feedback, and I know that she's a listener of her show because she always sends me like little messages on Facebook. So she had a couple comments about our episode, Children of the Force. Do you want to take it away, Chris?
I will. Anjali writes, listen to this week's episode, and not Children of the Force, not to be confused with Children of the Corn. Two different things. All right.
Or the other Children of the Force episode of Rebels.
Oh, right.
There's the Children of the Force and the Future of the Force. One's the Clone Wars episode, one's is the Rebel episode. Try to figure out which one's which.
All right. She says, listen to this week's episode of your podcast on the way home. Two things. One, crazy theory. Oh, we love crazy theories.
Mm-hmm.
Child that fell to the dark side on Glee Anselm is Snoke.
Ooh, we'll talk about that in a second. What's the other one?
Two, in regards to the Facebook comment, maybe the clones' helmets work like... And the comment, I think, was this about...
How did they work in space or something?
Yeah, it might have been the blue waffle virus.
Oh, yeah.
About how the troopers got...
Poisoned with their helmets on.
It was Aaron Henley. And in regards to the Facebook comment, maybe the clones' helmets work like the stormtrooper mask, where they work on some things like smoke, but not toxins. That makes sense.
I still argue
they just don't have a good enough filter.
Well, the thing is, I always argue, then how do they work in space? They're obviously not airtight.
They might wear different helmets. It might be different helmets that just look the same. They might put on
one
space.
One poor clone grabbed the wrong helmet.
Yeah, they might have, you know, their...
We'll name him Airlock.
Regular clone armor, and they might have their spacesuit clone armor. Although you would think if they had spacesuit clone armor, they would make it cooler and more like a spacesuit, you know, like just a variation on it or something. But I don't know, that's just me trying to you know, no prize it.
I'm going to go back to her crazy theory, just to give some, just in case you didn't hear our episode of Children of the Force, the planet of Glee Anselm became my white whale. Because in the episode Featurette, Dave Filoni said that they cut out a scene where they were going to take all the kids who were taken to Mustafar to Glee Anselm, and because they didn't know what the Sith did to them. But in the actual, what made it to the actual episode was Mace Windu was like, "There's a child on Glee Anselm," and Yoda was like, "No, that child has fallen to the dark side. He's lost to us." So I never thought about that. Like this, it could be Snoke. That's a really cool idea.
Or it could be some of the other members of the whatchamacallit.
The Inquisitors?
The Inquisitors, or whatever. What's his name's little group was?
There. Oh, the Knights of Ren?
The Knights of Ren, yeah. Kylo Ren, yep.
I still say Ezra and Rebels becomes a Knight of Ren. Like, that is still my theory. I'm sticking with that one until it's proven wrong.
Then he becomes Benicio del Toro, or... Is that who it is? Is it Benicio del Toro just got a role in episode 8?
I think so, but I thought they came out with who his character... Maybe they didn't. Maybe I'm thinking his role in Guardians of the Galaxy, because when I think Benicio del Toro, I think of the Collector.
He could be an old, beat-up with the dark side Ezra.
That would be cool. Yeah, but oh man, like that's actually something I talked about also in my Rebels trailer reaction was I was kind of bummed that we didn't see more Inquisitors and that there wasn't, there had to be more than just three. Because they were the fifth brother, the seventh sister. We didn't even know. I think the third one was something. I forgot which one he is, but he had number two, and then there's the Grand Inquisitor. So there must be at least a few numbers in between them, and I don't foresee them only having, like, eight of them, roughly, give or take. So I would actually still love to see more Inquisitors, especially since we found out that the Grand Inquisitor in Rebels was a Jedi Temple Guard.
Right.
And, like, I want to know what happened if there were other Jedi that fell to the dark side. If there were other Jedi that maybe survived Order 66 and were taken to the dark side. And maybe this child is an Inquisitor. I would love to see that. Maybe, like, he'll show up and be like, I used to live ugly handsome, and Mace Windu once sensed me, but I didn't go with him. So that'd be great.
That would be great. That would be almost miraculous fan service. So, you know what I mean?
And it would just be for me, because I think I'm the only one that gives a flying fuck about Gliansome.
Right.
I'm the only one that's probably like, what is Gliansome? What is this place? Like, seriously, go back to and listen to our episode of Children of the Forest. I rant about Gliansome, I think, like, two or three times in the episode.
Yes.
I was not quiet about it at all in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I mean, just disclosure here. I mean, that's the last episode. We just put that out upon when we're recording this, so it's fresh in my head. Yeah, you were, there's a reason you call it your white whale.
Yeah, I was, I only listened to
you were Ahab-ing it up.
Yeah, I only have had a chance to listen to the first half of that episode. And I know I've ranted at least about it twice in the first half, so I don't know if there's a third rant coming yet. I don't remember because we recorded it several weeks ago, so.
Well, maybe it's up to you to write the fan fiction.
Yeah. I did just write a superhero short story, though. It's on my website, Geeky Girl Experience. That just went up. So, it's called Moon Guide and Hunter. So, since you can find me at Geeky Girl Experience, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, where we have trillions and trillions of podcasts, billions and billions of podcasts. Just adding the newest one. Actually, the Hair Metal Heroes Week, working on a secret podcast, so that will probably be out by now, but I don't off the top of my head remember what the name of it was. It was a very complicated name, but I do remember, is it Jaws? That's our newest. And that's a Paul Spataro project where he reviews movies using the metric of the four Jaws movies to compare the movie to.
Okay, because that was about to be my last question, because I think last week you mentioned it, but
I don't think I said what it was.
I think that
was the teaser.
And I wasn't, and I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, so I still was just like, what is it Jaws?
I had the honor of being on the first episode along with Rob Kelly, and I can't remember his last name, but I remember his first name because it's my first name, and Chris, and they were both from the Fire and Water podcast network, the network of
Shaq Matthews.
Oh, that dickwad. We love you, but I hate you, you dickwad.
Hi, Shaq.
Hi, Shag. Shag's my arch podcast nemesis, by the way, guys. We're arch nemesis. We've been nemesis for years. Apparently, I'm not his only arch nemesis.
No, I found a new way to pick on him on Facebook. I talk to him like an old person who's just figured out how Facebook works and have conversations that have nothing to do with whatever the thread he's trying to talk about. Lately, it's been Star Trek Beyond.
You gotta call it Spacebook to him.
Yeah. And it's been quite fun.
Shag, I love you, and fuck you.
But anyway, we have a million podcasts. We have a Tutu Freaks Twitter that Gene Hendricks runs, and we have a J Guys and Jetter. J Guys and Jetter. We got one of them J Guys and Jetter websites there on the tweeters, and that's run by you.
I thought you said Jagguys and Cheddar.
Jagguys like, and Cheddar.
Well, that sounds like a delicious pizza.
When you're down at the store, pick me up some of them Jagguys and Cheddar chips.
Will do. Yeah, I do run our Twitter page at JGuysAndJedi, and you can also find me at Hope Mullinax. I also write What the Fangirl, and put up new things there. I really do need to finish my season 3 blog review, though part of me is very tempted just to wait until we get to season 3 so I can just do it episode by episode so I don't have to watch episodes twice.
So you could double up, yeah, get... kill two birds with one stone.
Because I was thinking about it, it's like, if I finish writing it now, I'm gonna watch these episodes, and then in about 12 weeks, or
you're gonna watch them all again.
And so I was like,
that's rough.
I might as well just, like, wait till I get there, and just cover them up, because I have half of it written already, but there's a few that, like, because when I watch it, I watch the season all the way through, and then what I do is I will pick my favorite episodes, and then I will rewatch those episodes, right of thinking about it, but now we're catching up with that, so that would mean I would have to watch the episode a third time. So I might just wait till I'm there. So
we'll see how it goes. But yes, I do write about other stuff other than just Star Wars, and as I mentioned, I have a blog called Geeky Girl Experience, where I might write about whatever the fuck I want to.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck I want to do, because it's my blog, and I can do whatever. I wrote a poem about a certain actor. I might have mentioned him in this. And then I also, like I said, wrote a superhero short story, so...
You got Hope of All Trades, too, and you do whatever the fuck you want on there, too.
Whatever the fuck I want, though. I've been sitting on a podcast for about 3 weeks now just because I've been slammed at work, so... I got half of it edited, and then I got hit with Summer Rush at work, so I haven't had a chance to finish that, so...
But yeah, we're doing Drunk Once Upon a Time in Wonderland right now.
I was going to say, is it another Drinky Drinky episode?
Well, we recorded 9 episodes of Drunk Wonderland, but I...
Okay.
Because we were binge-watching it that weekend, and we got through... There's only, I think, like, 13 episodes in Wonderland. We got to, like, episode 9. And so we got two-thirds of the way through, so I was talking with Billy and Allison, and we wanted to get together and finish the last, like, 4 or 5 episodes so I have an entire run. But it's summertime, kids are out of school, I work retail at a mall, so I just haven't had time to... I pulled some later hours and been doing kind of a lot of extra work. So once school starts back, which is only a few weeks away, it'd probably be back to school by the time this episode comes out.
Well, I just hope people appreciate the hit that your liver's taken for art.
I got drunk for you guys, and I'm not a heavy drinker, so I hope you enjoyed that.
Not a heavy drinker at all, so really it took one bottle of wine and I was fucking gone. I was speaking German and I can't even speak German.
One bottle of wine would put me to bed. I would curl up in a little ball and be asleep.
Well, now the key is what I do. You drink 2 cups of coffee and then drink the wine.
Oh, jeez. I would be insufferable then.
Yeah, it was great. I drank 2 cups of coffee and then drank a bottle of wine, so I was wired for sound and drunkenness. Oh, well, what a glorious episode this was. It was glorious. We talked about all sorts of things, from Rex to cut arms and Grievous and bitchy droids. I think this was a pretty damn good episode of Clone Wars.
Yes, I like the bitchy droids.
This was a damn good episode of JGuys and Jedi 2, so I guess until next... I don't have an exo.
The show's over?
Oh, God.
Why is the show gotta be over?
Beavis, why can't we ride up there? We want to watch JGuys and Jedi with you.
Can't we pull over? JGuys and Jedi is on.
Come on, Grievous. Don't you know that we need to recharge and watch? How are we going to watch JGuys and Jedi from down here?
Hey, what are you doing with your lightsaber?
Oh my God!
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWO. TRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."